Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Joining me this Christmas morning are two women who, at the height of their professional careers, they chose to follow a different path. Martina Purdy was one of Northern Ireland's best-known broadcast journalists, and Elaine Kelly, a successful barrister and family law expert, when in 2014, both decided to answer a call and devote their lives to their faith to become nuns. They served as members of the Adoration Sisters community in West Belfast until their convent became too small to sustain. Well, now the pair are following another path as guides on a new Camino, taking pilgrims along parts of St. Patrick's Way, an 82-mile trail through beautiful countryside ending in Downpatrick. And I'm delighted to welcome Martina Purdy and Elaine Kelly to our Christmas morning programme. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Miriam. Merry Christmas.
Good morning, Miriam.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you both. I love your story, both of you. Listen, Martina, listeners, of course, will remember you as a political correspondent for the BBC. How did your decision to take the habit of an Adoration Sister come about?
Well, it's a very long story, but I suppose I always had a Catholic faith. But looking back, it would have been on the surface. I certainly wasn't a perfect Catholic. I would say an a la carte Catholic. I suppose in my late 30s, early 40s, I started to pray more and to go deeper into my faith. And the more I prayed, the more I just had this sense of joy and purpose. And as time went on, I realized that I'd rather pray for these politicians than question them. And I realized that on a Monday night when I used to broadcast from Stormont, we had a special program in Monday evenings. And when it was my turn and it meant I couldn't go to adoration on a Monday night, I was disappointed. So I realized that I'd found something better than being on TV talking about politics. And that was sitting at the feet of Jesus, adoring him. And the 5 years I had in the convent, I've said it before and I'd say it again, it was the greatest privilege of my life. And it brought me a lot of joy and great sense of adventure. So I would have laughed in your face if you told me that I'd be a sister of adoration two doors down from where I used to wait on the corner for Martin McGuinness and Jerry Adams to come out and answer questions. But it was a great surprise, but it was the greatest surprise of my life.
And of course, Martina, you'd grown up in Canada and you'd attended a convent school. And Elaine, I think your experience was similar in that you pursued a career with intent for a really long period before your vocation emerged.
I basically had been at the bar for some 23 years and I had been brought up a Catholic and received all the gifts of the church. And I kind of was at a point in my life when I knew something, Miriam, was working deeply on me. And I used to go to the Convent of Adoration to pray because they have a beautiful chapel there in which the Blessed Sacrament is exposed. And I used to go there, particularly times whenever I was, you know, had a lot of heavy cases on and stuff, and I used to go and pray. But, do you know, out of the blue, one night I went to pray. I even remember the date, Sunday, the 9th of March, 2014. And I was there praying before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament with the sisters and members of the public, because the beautiful thing about the sisters is that people could join in their worship and can join them in the chapel. And as I was there praying, I had this amazing experience before the Blessed Sacrament. And the Lord touched my heart. And Miriam, I heard these seven words: "You will be a sister of adoration." And you know, that completely turned my life upside down. I walked in as a member of the bar. And when I walked out 2 hours later, I knew that I was going to be joining the Sisters of Adoration. I had a deep personal experience with Jesus Christ, and he called me to be a Sister of Adoration. And 4 or 5 months later, after discernment, discussion, and prayer, I entered the Sisters in August 2014. And you know, like Martina, I totally agree. It has been the greatest privilege of my life. And I have to say, I remember I grew up in West Belfast during the Troubles. I was a child of the Troubles, in a sense. But we had a great childhood. We had the Black Mountains beside us, a turf lodge, and we used to go and play, and we were safe in that sense. I had a great childhood, and when I entered the Sisters and became a Sister of Adoration, I got that sense of being free again, and it was the most amazing time of my life.
I would say a lot of people listening this Christmas morning to you both would be really touched by your story and also amazed by it. I mean, Martina, what was it like for you to make the transition from a pretty hectic pace of a broadcast journalist's life to that more sedate, contemplative life of a convent?
It was a bit of a shock at times. And at first it was a bit like, my gosh, it's like living with my BBC colleagues and working with them and you're never getting to go home.
Oh, nightmare.
A nightmare. And you kind of learn learn to bite your tongue, because if you say the wrong thing, you will apologize. And it's better to just fight with yourself than kind of insult your sister. But it was a great experience. And I found that, you know, the deeper I went into the vocation, the more I felt that I was at home. I mean, it was very freeing. My colleagues would come to visit. You know, they were kind of surprised when I said I didn't drink anymore. And they said, not at all. I said, well, you can pour that whiskey into a cake. And so they started bringing whiskey cake to the convent.
Going back to you, Elaine, and then Martina, you can answer this too. Did your family and friends think you'd gone cracked?
Some of my friends were quite surprised and some of them weren't, because those who really knew me could see something working in me. And they knew that my faith was very important. But I have a great story to tell you about my mom. Whenever I was entering the sisters, obviously I wasn't 25, I was a mature woman. And I went and spoke first of all to my dad. And my dad said, well, Elaine, it's not as if you're 15. So, you know, you go with my blessing. He was still my father. And when I spoke to my mom about it, I was quite shocked, because she wasn't a bit happy. My mom was, you know, her faith was very important to her. So I said, Mom, what's wrong? She says, Elaine, I'm losing my right arm, because she knew that I was going into a contemplative semi-closed order. So when I went for my live-in with the sisters, and I asked my mom to keep it quiet, and I said, Mom, look, this is important. Don't be telling everybody. I was living with the sisters and going back and forward to the bar quietly to do the necessary work that I needed to do, because obviously I was self-employed. But then, Miriam, people started meeting me on the street and everything else and said, look, congratulations. We hear that you're entering the sisters. And I kind of said, look, who told you that? And they said, your mommy. It turned out that my mom, who always went to Mass in our local parish in Holy Trinity every morning, she would go to 10 o'clock Mass and she would tell everybody. And then when I went and spoke to the Superior General, because I thought, how am I going to, you know, keep this quiet? She just simply turned to me and said, Elaine, is it keeping your mommy happy? And she said, yeah, because my mom's joy at my call to be a religious sister started to flow and become complete when she could see the joy in other people that I was entering. And so my mom was one of my best fans after that.
That's a great story. And Martina, your friends and family, how did they react?
Well, it was kind of a mixture. One of my brothers thought I was drunk, and I said, I'm totally sober. And he's like, because I told him that I was quitting the BBC, and he was a bit taken aback. With my colleagues, I told some of them in a private meeting, and then I left, and then it was left to the head of news at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon to make this announcement. And some of them were just relieved it wasn't job losses. But some of them were quite emotional. So I have to say, journalists have a really good heart. And, you know, there was one or two who were a bit concerned, came to stage an intervention. But when they saw how happy I was, they decided to just leave me there, because, you know, whatever they thought, if I'd having some kind of crisis, they could see I was happy. As for the politicians, Martin McGuinness and Peter Robinson invited me for tea at Stormont when I was a postulant. Oh. And with great joy, the superior allowed me to go. And apparently, someone told me later, they weren't really speaking at the time. There was a lot of friction, but they were both in the same office together listening to my story. And after about half an hour, I said, don't you two have something else to be doing? Oh, no, we want to hear this. And so they recorded a picture, which I still have.
I think there's a movie in the story of you two, by the way. I really do. There's a musical.
We got a lot of offers to go into the pub when we were on the Falls Road in our habits. We were called Sister Act. And we'd say, we'd love to come in for a drink, but it'd be our last one.
Yeah, that's right. If I could count the number of times we were asked into the pub, we would be rich women by now.
A lot more than when I wasn't in a habit, I tell you.
And Martina, explain to us what you're doing in Downpatrick, how you ended up there, and how did the idea to guide pilgrims and walkers along the way of St. Patrick come about?
Well, it wasn't my idea for a start. I found myself walking miles and miles last summer. Well, we landed in the cradle of Christianity. A friend of ours, a week before we were due to leave the convent, she was heartbroken when she heard the news. And she offered us a place in Downpatrick. And we were going traveling in America and Canada. And when we got back, we came to a house that was totally prepared for us. We met this, what St. Paul called unusual kindness here. And so the cupboards were stocked with canned goods, and the fridge, everything was ready for us. And we were just completely overwhelmed. I was praying to St. Patrick. I didn't want a job. I wanted a mission. And this is really strange, but when I came out of Saturday morning Mass to go to the parish shop to buy some prayer cards to St. Patrick, I had these prayer cards in my hand. I was still holding them when I came out of the shop. This man approached me. He said, "Are you Martina Purdy?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Would you be interested in writing for St. Patrick's Center?" And I'm looking at St. Patrick's picture going, "Yes, I would." And so within a few days, I was doing PR for them. And then the third thing I wrote was that we were closing for COVID. And then during the lockdown, I had kind of asked them at the time about where's your walk, and they gave me a passport for driving, which is what you were talking about at the start. A lot of that is a drive. I said, well, where's your walk? And they didn't have one. So Elaine and I started walking when the rules permitted all around Downpatrick, and we found all these treasures here, you know, Inch Abbey, which is one of the finest examples of Gothic architecture on this island. We found the largest monument to St. Patrick in the world at the top of Sleep Patrick, which gives these panoramic views. So we thought we would link them in a walk, which we did with the help of Dr. Tim Campbell from St. Patrick's Center. And it was his idea to make us pilgrim guides. I think he had us on the website before he even asked us. And so I found myself walking. Elaine says you do the old lady walk 6 miles every morning, Wednesdays and Thursdays, and Elaine was doing 11. And then we were doing 8 in Newcastle. But it got us really fit, and it gave us a purpose. And people were coming for different reasons. I mean, some people want a Christian pilgrimage experience, knowing that when you're physically challenged, you get a spiritual gift from that. Other people just wanted a good walk, and they got the walk of their life. And then some, you know, St. Patrick said that what is of the countryside is of the Most High God. And that is one of the gifts of lockdown, that people started to look with wonder at the beauty around them. And so we had people from all parts of Ireland coming on our walks, and they loved them.
And, you know, I have to agree, because those walks were as good for me, if not more, as they were for the pilgrims. Because at the time that the walks were constructed, and we started them on the 1st of July, just as the executive rules permitted us to do so. And I was walking for 2 days, walking 11 and a half miles each day, taking people to the various sites. And as well as for the pilgrims, it was a salve to me, because I have to be honest, it helped me in my recovery and healing. I got so much out of it. And it was just as much a pilgrimage for me as for the people.
And the great thing is, it's a bit like an Irish Camino. And if anyone listening wants to go on it, you have a website, don't you? stpatrickcenter.com for them.
Oh, that's right, Miriam. We have two new adventures. One of them is a canoeing experience. So I went canoeing with our new partner, Mobile Team Adventure, and up the Coyle. The way the monks at Inch Abbey would have seen that area, because they traveled often by boat to their retreat house. And Elaine has been scouting an amazing walk. You can tell them, Elaine, about your coastal walk to St. Patrick's Well.
Yeah, we have an amazing walk. Miriam, you have to come on it yourself. Absolutely, okay. Out of this world. You go to Ballyhornan Beach. We walk along the Holy Way, which takes us to St. Patrick's Well, which was there at the time of Patrick and is believed perhaps to be a construction of Patrick himself. Then we lead on to our toll, which is a beautiful old church, one of the churches that's actually meant to be constructed by Patrick himself on the County Down coast. Just absolutely breathtaking, and it's just something that people will just love.
I gather, Martina, you do the nicer walk in Elaine, since you're a sportswoman with a number of marathons under your belt. You do the tough one.
Yeah, when I was younger, I actually completed 3 Dublin marathons and 3 Belfast marathons. I always have been quite sporty. And actually, when I went to the convent, you know, that continued, because I was permitted to, on special occasions, to go mountain climbing, hiking and things.
Yeah, so we had, Elaine, I joked to Elaine that, you know, it's not a death march. They can sit down if they want to. I take them on a gentler walk through the countryside to Inch Abbey, where the Game of Thrones was also filmed. And then I take them on a gentle walk along the river, and they can now canoe with Elaine if they want, up to Salt Church, which is the place where St. Patrick built his first church and where he died. And after you walk up that hill, you'll know why he died at the top of that hill. Yeah.
Well, look, Martina Purdy and Elaine Kelly, on this Christmas morning, I think it sounds a wonderful idea. You're inspirational women. I've loved talking to you. Have a great Christmas day, and I wish you all the best of luck for 2021.
God bless you, Miriam.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Take care. God bless.
I'll be there. Thanks a lot.